We are going to call the meeting to order. The committee does not have a quorum yet, but we will officially call the meeting to order when the quorum arrives. There are other committee meetings that are just finishing, so we will, as they come in, the clerk will note their attendance, and then when we get an official quorum, we'll interrupt the testifying to be able to call the committee to order officially. One of the purposes of Ways and Means, our biggest charge, is to be able to try to establish targets for each of the different committees. And as we are trying to establish those targets, and I understand the budgeting process, every session we start with the governor's budget proposal, and the famous saying is that the governor proposes and the legislature disposes of it. But in trying to our best to have an open process and understanding that process and understanding the needs of the citizens, we've been holding several meetings outside of the Capitol area. We've had a meeting in Isanti with Representative Easton's district. He was able to attend along with the senators from that area. We had a very good attendance there and good testimony. We had a meeting in Eagan, very good testimony in the suburb. And next Monday night we'll be in Rochester to a community meeting there. Besides hearing from the public, hopefully outside of the metropolitan area, we've also asked the chair of each of the divisions and the Republican lead in each of the divisions to react to the governor's proposal, give us some guidance on what those particular proposals happen to be. We've established a few ground rules. We've said that we've got 15 minutes for each of the divisions, no more. If it takes 3 minutes, that's really nice. You might get a bigger target.
How about 2 minutes?
If it takes 20 minutes, you might be in trouble.
Where's the highlighter?
But we are going to try to get through five of them this evening, and we'll be scheduling one on Thursday evening, and then one next Tuesday evening as well. What I'd like to do is, for the members of the committee, is if we could have the five different groups present their reactions to the governor's proposal tonight. And if you have questions, can you just write them down? And then at the end, we will ask any of those questions, if that's okay with the committee members. There's some food available, courtesy of the committee administrator, Christine. She did bake the cookies, or she said her son baked the cookies, helped her, and she didn't take credit for the bread. I can't believe that. But thank you very much for that. You know, last couple years, the committee in L.A., Shirley always had cookies. I hinted. Okay, we have a quorum. Let's call the meeting to order officially. And the first one then today, where we have the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee before us, Representative Giles and Representative Rudolph. And we'll just let either one of you take off, and the time is yours.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was called on at 11:25 in the Finance Committee, 11:29 and a half, and I did it in half a minute. They adjourned. I am the chairman of this new committee, Minnesota Heritage Finance. It's very appropriate to a senior citizen who is phasing out. And I really like the subjects that are in. I would like a couple of more, but, you know, I don't decide these things. As you know, we had 13 accounts, and one went to Representative Kahn's, the Capitol Board, Capitol Architectural Board. We still have Arts and Public Radio and TV, amateur sports, before ethnic councils, humanities it will be restored, the Historical Society, Science Museum, Tourism and Film, I guess Film Board, used to be separate, is included there, even though it doesn't appear on paper. And the zoo, but you know, I call it the zoos because we have more than one, that we are only funding the Minnesota Zoo. The governor has increased funding for every one of these, but you know, some quite a bit and some not so much, which is nice. But as you know, 2003 hurricane cut a lot of programs, and I was hoping that we would be able to make up those cuts, or at least really do you know, quite a bit to restore those funds. So we'll see, hopefully. We have some bills that we have heard. For example, Representative Callan introduced a bill to abolish the fees at the Capitol when the students and other tourists come. They have to pay $2 or $3. That would cost about $120,000. I would like to see more local historical sites funded because it is important. Last biennium we only had $56,000. That's almost not enough. We had heard another bill yesterday about preserving Dakota Ojibwe languages, which is important. They're asking for quite a bit of money. I think they're going to have to be more realistic if this can be done. And I introduced a bill to establish a Minnesota Heritage Commission. Ethnic Heritage Commission. And that would cost approximately $38,000 a year. Environmental and historic tourism are really important, and I hope that we can put money into history. My wife and I like traveling throughout Minnesota and other states and looking at small towns. We have so many historic towns, but they're struggling. They need the federal government has pretty much abandoned the state and local government compared to the way they used to fund. So it depends on the state and local governments to preserve those historic sites and buildings, which is an economic development, because tourism is an economic development. The United States has a large surplus in tourism. Even though we are not doing, the federal government is not funding the promotion of tourism. When I was chairing economic development, international trade, and tourism in the 90s, I was in Washington and stopped at the Commerce Department. The Commerce Department supplies foreign commercial officers and tourism promotion. I found out that our entire Mexican, Central American, South American tourism office was not even in any of those countries, but in Miami. Foreign countries have tourism offices from, you know, in Washington and other cities, and they are really exploiting tourism. I think we could do much better with international. When I was chairing the committee, we could manage to earmark about 10%, I think, for international tourism, because that's where the money is. We also are doing well with international students, even though it's a plus economically for us, even though when we got into bad times financially, international student funding was pretty much eliminated. Where we're doing badly is in general trade. We have a huge deficit, mostly because of oil imports. But, and that's going to continue, unfortunately, because it's going to take us a while to get our alternative energy, which we are just getting going on. So I would hope that we would emphasize tourism and history and the environment, because that's where the economic development is happening as far as tourism is concerned. Thank you. Representative Ertl.
Mr. Ertl. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Yarros. I think that Representative Yarros and I, share a lot of concerns and have similar goals in this committee. There are many worthwhile projects that need to be funded. Unfortunately, we're going to have to prioritize these. There just isn't enough to do all that I think, we should do. I think many of the areas under the purview of this committee represent a real investment in Minnesota, in our history, in our tourism, as Representative Yarros was implying. There are some ways that we can initiate, I think, some inexpensive ways to coordinate culture, tourism, and history, and the environment, and I'd like to explore those. But in terms of, our targets right now, we don't know the February forecast yet. The governor has proposed an 11.1% increase in this budget. I think that's pretty much, in the ballpark of what we need to spend, but there's probably some tweaking that we can do with this as we go through the process, but I think we're pretty close right now with the governor's suggestions.
Thank you. I'm going to change the rules a little bit and allow a couple of questions if we can, and just hold it down for time frame and everything else so that these people don't have to wait till the very end to ask the questions. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Mall of America is a huge tourist magnet. 40 million people visit the mall every year, and 10 million of them are, if not out of state, they're from out of the country. So if you thought about that, developing that aspect of our tourism.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's an Earhart.
Yeah, we dealt with it quite a bit during the 90s when I said that the tourism department should earmark at least 10% to promote international tourism. The Mall of America gets more international tourists or shoppers and tourists than the canyon, the Grand Canyon and the Disney World put together. So it's a mega tourist draw. What we are not doing is we should be doing more to spread them out into other parts. They come here, they shop. Our companies, our tourism companies, are not taking them around to see the rest of Minnesota. And I have not checked with the Mall of America lately, but I did talk to them about that in the late 90s. It is. It's a great success.
Mr. Erdo?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, also you may be aware that there's a major expansion being planned for the Mall of America, Mall of America 2, and we need to capitalize on that with tourism as well throughout the state.
Other questions? That you did an excellent job within the time frame. I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
You don't have to stick around to the end of the meeting. I'm going to change the agenda a little bit. We've had a request because someone has a meeting earlier on. So would the early childhood group come forward? Representative Slavik and Representative Eastland. And whoever wants to go first, it doesn't have to be the chair. If the lead wants to go first, that's fine too. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And again, within the 15 minutes.
Okay, I think we can take the 15 minutes. And thank you. We have a meeting on the contaminated water issues in my district tonight, so I got to be there by 7, so very much appreciate it. First of all, I want to say how pleased we are that there's an early childhood committee in the House. So I want to thank the speaker. I don't know if she's here, but I definitely thank her for making this happen, because I came here as a freshman and served on this committee, and then Representative Sikora chaired the committee, and then we went several years without it. So it's really great to be back and looking at these issues. Our committee overall is looking at three areas. First of all, closing the achievement gap. Secondly, quality relating to child care. And third, citizen engagement related to ABE, which is also in our area. We have two subcommittees that have been, they're work groups that have been appointed. Representative Gottwald is doing a work group on parenting and parents' involvement. And Representative Peterson is doing one on strategic systems in early childhood. a little bit about each of those areas and the proposals. For closing the achievement gap, one of the really important things is looking at our current programs, school readiness, Head Start, ECFE, looking at what they're doing and looking at what kinds of strategic investments we need. Now, we're going to do kind of like the governor does. We have the cover of Session Weekly in the audience today. And we wanted her to stand, Lydia, if you can stand. And we want to thank you and your mom and your dad and your brother for coming down here because, Mr. Chair members, they want to tell you and show you by their support today how important ECFE is to families and to parenting involvement. So we very much appreciate it. So hopefully that helped a little bit, right, members, with how we're doing. So we're looking at those basic investments, and then there's a proposal on the table by the governor and also one that's in the Senate and the House about sort of the scholarship allowances idea. The governor has funded that at what I think is a pretty appropriate level. We may want to keep it at that level and then look at doing some investing in our base programs like ECFE and Head Start and School Readiness. We all know that back in 2003 there were a number of cuts made, and we're not back to those basic levels. So I think that's one of the big things we are looking at. Second of all, in terms of quality, what we're looking at is, you know, whether it's grandma with a child or a child care group, or if it's a sophisticated child care center, what are we doing about quality and how do you measure that? The governor has on the table some grants to help improve quality in child cares. We think that that's a good start. We think potentially we should do a little more in that area. If a lot of these proposals go hand in hand, if you're going to do something like an allowance scholarship program, you have to have quality programs to put it in. So it's kind of figuring out how you make both of those happen. We've had really great testimony on our committee. We have some of our committee members here, like Representative Murphy and Representative Mary Erin Murphy and Representative Mary Murphy, our ex officio member, that has been participating. We've had Art Rolnick come down, talk about the bang for your buck that you get with investing in early childhood education, Arthur Reynolds from the university. So we have a number of people talking to us that this is a really good investment for the legislature, and we're hoping that this committee and this legislature will see fit to make those investments in this area. Lastly, in terms of ABE, and there was a rally today in ABE. Maybe some of you went to that. They've also had flat funding for the last several years. So kind of our base programs, child care, Head Start, ECFE, ABE, all of them are just out there flat, and yet they have waiting lists growing. You know, ABE is where we're serving our immigrant population, where we're helping people get their high school degrees, where we're educating our workforce. It's really kind of the top tier in Representative Mary Murphy's committee. So we really need to do more there. The governor, in my opinion, didn't propose enough. So that's the overall assessment is there's some good proposals on the table, but we'd like to see more opportunities and more investments. I would like to see.
Representative Ethan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like to speak to the issue a little bit differently, maybe from a higher elevation. Representative Slawick has talked, I think, about a lot of the specific programs and the funding that's occurred in the governor's budget. I guess what I'd like to speak to first of all is just the fact that I've only been here for three terms up to now. This is my fourth term, but after the last two terms, it's really interesting to be at this point in the process and have a budget forecast that has money in it. And I just think it'd be good to acknowledge that the governor's budget he's proposed a $34.5 billion budget for the next biennium, which is some of that's one-time money, but it's almost $3 billion more than what we're spending in the current biennium. And so I think that's the encouraging thing, is that what we're looking at is an opportunity maybe to do some things to build back some of the cuts and to do some of the things that maybe some of us would have liked to have done over the past couple of bienniums. So I serve on, this is another different experience for me this year, because I serve on five finance committees. So I'm seeing the finance side from five different angles, which is kind of interesting. And what I've noticed so far in all of the committees is that we're hearing lots of testimony, hearing overviews of the budget, hearing requests from agencies and departments, and hearing testimony for other kinds of requests that we need to be doing. And it's clear that there's no shortage of places to spend money. And I think that's another thing that seems to be a common theme around it. And that's true in early childhood as well. There's just lots of proposals on the table. I mean, you think about it, we're talking about the early learning, the MELF thing, and doing some four-year-old pre-kindergarten kind of stuff. There's all-day kindergarten that's being discussed in the K-12 committee. We're looking at formula increases, and then there's other committees, all of them doing the same thing, talking about lots of ways and lots of options and ways to spend money. But budgeting is about making tough decisions. And so this process that we're going through here, and I appreciate the opportunity just to speak tonight, but the process that we're going through here, I think, is really to come to grips with the fact that we can't do everything. And somehow we're going to have to misset priorities, and we're going to have to do some things that maybe step on some toes, and we're going to fund something here and not fund something over there. But I think the theme that I'd like to emphasize is that I think that we're in a good position as a state. I think we have enough revenue. I think we have enough revenue. The governor has laid out the parameters of what we have to spend. And I think, in that respect, I have a lot of agreement with the governor. I think he's put the measure way out there, probably up a lot farther than quite a few Republicans would like to go. And I think that's a good thing, because we're taking advantage of the fact that the state is healthy. But I think what I'd like to just say in closing is that I think that some Slavic hit the nail on the head, that we have lots of issues in early childhood that are ready to be addressed. It's been an area that's been neglected. There's a lot of research out there that says there's some things that we should and could be doing. And I think we're coming up with some ways to look at that and do those things. But more importantly, I think, and I don't mean to say this in a politically negative way, but the campaigns are over. And I think all of us campaigned, Republicans and Democrats alike, campaigned on doing more and not raising taxes and giving property tax relief and all those kinds of things. And now is when the rubber hits the road. And I think now when we have to take off our campaign hats and put on our representative hats and get down to the table and get to work and figure out how we're going to set the priorities. And I think that's the challenge for this committee. I think it's very difficult to look at setting targets from one committee perspective, because what we're hearing is that the needs are enormous. But every committee is hearing that. And somebody has to make those decisions, and it's your leadership that we're going to be looking at to do that. I should stop talking so our target stays as high as it can be. But I appreciate the opportunity to have the dialogue, and I think I just want to reiterate that I think it's important that we recognize that we have a lot of needs, but we also are in a situation where we have a significant amount of new revenue, and I think if we use it wisely, we can do good things for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Again, the opportunity to have any quick questions if necessary. Representative Schemper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Eastland, that $2 billion surplus that you mentioned, that's become a $3 billion surplus in the last few weeks, is that before or after the budget projection is adjusted for inflation?
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The number that I'm going by is that in the current biennium, we're spending about $31.5 billion. The governor's budget is about $34.5 billion. So if inflation is in there, whatever is in there, I'm just talking about the gross differences between this budget and the budget that we're going to be looking at for the next biennium.
Okay. Representative Swayam?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and not to get confrontational in a wonderful long meeting like this, but just to make sure we clarify, the governor's budget recommendation is probably twice what the rate of inflation is. Inflation somewhere in the neighborhood of this next biennium being 4.2%. The governor is recommending a 9.3% increase. I think we ought to be able to live within that. And just to clarify one thing, Representative Slavik, I know you've mentioned a couple of times. I've been in meetings we've been at. We're glad that we have an early childhood committee again. Just to make sure we set the record straight, we did have, as you say, an early childhood committee. I think back in 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, and then to accommodate the Senate, to make sure we lined up accounts with the Senate, to outreach to them, to help the process at the end, to accommodate the Senate, the House eliminated that committee with the help of the Majority Leader and myself to accommodate the Senate. That's why we eliminated that Early Childhood Committee in 2002. then, if you remember correctly, the Senate had a little change in leadership in, I think, the early 2004, and there had to be a committee found for a former majority leader. I think that's what took place. I think we all understand that. So they recreated an early childhood committee, went the opposite direction than they had gone. So I just wanted to make sure you clarified the record as to why the House did not have an early childhood committee. It was to accommodate and work with and cooperate with the Senate at that time.
Well, Mr. Speaker,
Thank you. I tried.
Thank you for clarifying.
You are a big target.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Former Speaker, thank you for clarifying that. However, you know, how one's actions, let's see, what is it, walk the walk, talk the talk, actions speak louder than words. Sure. You know, the fact is we're glad it's back.
Cooperation is important.
Let's go through the chair now, if we can, okay?
Thank you.
This is supposed to be a love-in. Okay? Thank you very much for appearing before the committee, and I'm very sincere in this, that we want to try to understand the governor's proposal, the needs that are out there, and so forth. Just a point of clarification, with the February forecast, or the November forecast, gave us about $2.1 billion of additional money for the biennium. The $3 billion comes out when you take those projections and extend them out the next 2 years, and we do need to look at that extension out for the over the four-year period, because one of my goals, and I hope of the committee's goals, is to try to set the spending and revenue targets so that we don't go up and down, that we have some stability in state budget. I know that will never be perfect, but hopefully we can try to smooth that out a little bit. Thank you very much. Next, I'm going to call in the State Government Finance Committee.
I want everybody to know.
Welcome to the committee, Chair Khan. If you'd like to present your committee's information, and I don't know if you're in the room, but Chair Solberg cautioned people that the shorter their presentation, the higher their target. So, welcome to the committee.
Can we just walk away now? Well, Madam Chairman and members, first of all, we'll point out that our committee has the smallest budget and it has the lowest emotional appeal behind it. No one that comes in and talks about needy, how state government needs. No one comes around and tells us how state government needs more, and you know, there are people who aren't going to be eating, and poor children are going to be left out, and that sort of thing. So, but we do know, we will give the number. I think is that we're about 1.8% of the total budget. So you really can't balance the budget on the backs of the state government division. And there are several things. I'll say the kinds of things that I'm interested in doing. And the biggest item in our budget, and one of the things is a lot of things that we do affects all the other divisions, too. And so it's not clear how that goes and how that fits into the targets. We had some interesting statistics today from the Department of Administration about all the a bunch of extra things they needed to increase efficiency and to stop from losing money everywhere else in state government, and we had some conversation about that. The biggest item in our budget, biggest new item in our budget, is expenses to the Office of Technology, and I tend to be rather supportive of that. I do believe that there is a lot of savings to be done in having that done in one central knowledgeable place. There are a couple of things that are missing from the budget that we're interested in. One, Madam Chairman, that you and I have worked on the privacy of DNA information, a small appropriation that was missing from the governor's budget, and I'd like to put that an item like that back in. There's another group that's called LIMIC, the Land Management Information Center, which the governor eliminated last year. The legislature put it back in part, and because it wasn't part of the base and not having been in the people making those big decisions, among the people making those big decisions last year, I don't know how something that you can step. There was very good information about how cost-effective this was, not only for the state, but for all the local units of government that use it, could just become a one-time appropriation and not be part of the base. I think that's part of Representative Solberg looking at the big picture so that things don't go up and down. Well, I don't care when they don't go up and down, but when you do something that doesn't make sense to make them not go up and down, then I'm not sure how that works. So I think those are issues that we're looking at. We do have the elimination of the Department of Employee Relations. We're kind of both struggling to see what's that's doing other than changing the sides of the boxes, but I think I'll let my cohort speak.
Thank you, Chair Kahn. Representative DeLaForest.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. As I said, this just has a low emotion level, and Chair Kahn and I actually agree on a lot of the initiatives, and I know when the roles were reversed and she and Chairman Seifert got together, there's a great deal of cooperation, and we intend to continue that. And I think there is a lot of opportunity out there regarding the Office of Enterprise Technology and its related initiatives. Just two of them real quick. For example, right now the state of Minnesota doesn't know how many computers it owns, doesn't know where they are, there's no inventory. So part of this overhaul would identify things like that so we know what we own. I think that's good government, and I think we'd all agree on that. The same situation applies to the real estate. The state really doesn't know what kind of real estate it owns, or at least is in a unified way. Each one of the little silos like DNR might know. And the way that that manifests itself in a lot of inefficiencies is that, well, I'll give you an example. Judge Krause from the Office of Administrative Hearings has frequently badgered the State Government Finance Committee because he was housed with his group at administrative hearings in very high-priced real estate in downtown Minneapolis they didn't want. They wanted to be in St. Paul, and they wanted to be in the revenue building where they could live for free, so to speak. They wouldn't have to pay any rent. So that's an example of the kind of disconnect that can be eliminated if you properly inventory your real estate. And so I think there are a lot of savings that could be realized. And I also want to make sure that we as a committee and as a legislature need to have a high degree of certainty that these investments are going to pay off, because it's not going to be cheap. It's going to be many millions of dollars. And I know Chair Kahn is interested, and I am, in avoiding an IRS type of situation where they seem to spend billions to overhaul their computers every few years and it never works. So we want to have a degree of assurance that that will work. I think one final thing, we are interested, I believe, in a bipartisan basis on getting a handle for an oversight procedure for grants management. State of Minnesota administers billions of dollars in grants every year, and according to Mr. Nobles, we don't have the kind of oversight system we should. And that's not a commentary on the merits of any particular grant. I would hope we would all agree that any grant money we distribute needs to have an oversight process.
And I think as part of that, Madam Chairman, as part of that oversight process, one of the things we're going to try and do, and as part of the aid to small agencies, to see if one of the things we can do is probably help give some aid to some of these grantees, too, that would then be cost-effective in itself in terms of making sure that they can fill out the forms, that they can get the computer skills they need, and so forth.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much for your preparation and your time today. According to the chair's list here in front of me, I believe K-12 Finance Division will be next. Welcome to the committee, Chair Dreiling and Representative Heigerton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our K-12 education budget is a significant portion of the total state general fund, about 40%, and we would be thrilled if the chair would up us to 45%. I think we could deal with that. We have three major goals, and then I'll go through the assignment of what we agree with the governor, what we don't agree with, and priorities that are missed. Generally speaking, our three priorities are an excellent education for all students, taking a look while doing that at learning disparities, and then having equity and regional fairness around the state, which would include property tax fairness. The first area that the chair assigned us is priorities in the governor's budget, where we are in agreement. And I will say that in my years in the legislature serving under Governor Pawlenty, this is the budget that he has proposed with which I agree with the most. There's really quite a few things in there that I think we can work with. One of them is, and it's all, you know, the devil is in the details, but there are common goals. And one of them is increasing the basic formula. That would be the question of if we're going by the consumer price index or the implicit inflator, but still an increase. Special education being increased because we know that's sapping our school districts. However, this one I will be a little more specific. The governor is including an increase of 2% and 2%, which doesn't do any more than stem the tide of the increasing cross-index, cross-subsidy by half, and then that's still not addressing the cuts that have been made before that. So that one is really, really short of what is really needed for schools. Having additional time for at-risk students, the extended time revenue, these are all areas of agreement, having more college credit opportunities, having rigorous courses in things like career technical education and STEM education, having less reliance on property taxes with the levies for schools, having better enhanced education training and mentoring and recruitment opportunities for teachers, technology, the alternative school calendar options we're in agreement on taking a look at and doing something with, and also increasing funding for libraries, which have not ever been increased in terms of the aid for libraries since before I was a legislator. I'm very ashamed of that. I'm glad the governor's doing a little bit with that. I think we need to do a lot more. The topic of world language is an area of agreement. The governor's looking at 4 years in high school, and we're more interested in looking at the younger kids where they learn easier, but still it's a topic of agreement. And then also having a broader option for local districts, not just the Mandarin Chinese, but that is definitely a good one as well. And then the three are high schools. We like the Gates model, where it was rigor, relevance, and relationships rather than results, and doing a little more with the relationships, which we know is really missing in the lives of a lot of students that we deal with in the schools today. That's the longest list I want to make a note of, but here's the list of some priorities in the governor's budget where our division is in disagreement, and one of them would be having the required 1 year of a post-secondary experience in the high school without any funding to implement that. You know, it's a really good thing, I think, to get kids their feet wet with taking a college class or a vocational class, but to just mandate that schools do that without any funding at all or any planning, I think, is a bit premature. Tying the QCOMP to the formula and increasing that total amount, rewarding schools, the Successful Schools Initiative, $150 million, that would be one-time money to schools to get the 3 stars on their report card. We're not enamored with the report card to begin with, and then to tie that kind of money on a one-time basis is a huge, huge disagreement. There isn't any room for systemic change if you're going to pour money in, but only for one little time, and then take it away. And then the priorities that are of our division that are not addressed in the governor's budget, there's, you know, some smaller things, but the main one is the voluntary all-day kindergarten. So that, Madam Chair, concludes my presentation. I hope I left time for Representative Heigerton.
Thank you, Chair Brailing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ditto. But anyways, to be that not redundant, there's no adage of stitching time saves nine. And I think the governor's model, when you look at where he came out, we saw Representative Slavy talk about the importance of early childhood. That is an early intervention program of getting these kids where they belong in kindergarten, get everybody up to the same base. The other thing is there's one component missing
that I'm hoping to carry this year, and that's a, and I've talked to the governor's office a couple times on it, and it's something that we could tie in with the three R's. It's early intervention in special ed. We saw the governor up opposing two and two, and we look at the cost factor of the special ed component, it's four and four in our schools. But there's a pilot program out there in St. Croix Valley, and we're going out there to see it, and I've got, there's a senator carrying a bill, we're going to meet on the bill tomorrow, but I'm going to hopefully carry it in the House, and it's early intervention of trying to keep some of the students from being classified special. There's 14 components, and this would address, St. Croix has used it, it's dropped their numbers in half. And if we can get those results with some of those 3R monies focused there, that would help a lot. The other component that the governor had was the alternative pathways. Some of you remember his initiative in the eighth grade of trying to get these students focused. And we need to get them on a pathway of looking at a skill, if not a four-year college. And I think that's an component, that's a component that we need to look at. Representative Grayling talked about the issue of the college on a high school campus is very, very important. There's a lot of school districts that are doing it. We need to get all the school districts there. But yet at the same time, Representative Dabney had a bill this morning that addressed the issue that we need, and he had a bill of earmarking $150 towards that. I like that because not only does it prepare the kid for 4 years of college, but there's an end in there where it ties, Representative Gunther, you and I have talked many times about that, the skills of tying these vocational schools in with this as well. And I think that's very, very important. There's other issues going forth. I know Representative Solberg, I think you're coming up with a bill, decline in enrollment. I don't know if you have the bill. Somebody has a bill, and it was coming in tomorrow on decline in enrollment. I know there's a couple of them coming in and trying to address that issue, changing the weight factor or whatever. We already have something in place there, but some feel that that's not enough. We have other issues that will be coming forth. The debt equalization, we've had a series of meetings. Representative here, Representative Doty, Representative I, Wealthy, Representative Demmer, among of others, have talked about some of the problems that we're having with the debt equalization, how things have changed because of the escalating poverty. It's not only a real issue, but it's also become a suburban issue. But those are just some of the issues, and we've got some really positive things going forth, and I think we can build on them, and I think that's the key.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Shumper.
Yes, can I ask, have all the cuts that occurred in 2003 been restored in K through 12 with this budget from the governor?
Representative Grayling.
You know, if you ask about early childhood, we still need $8 more of the for the early childhood family education to get up to where it was before it was cut. It's supposed to be $120 per pupil, and that would not be taking into account inflation since then. We have some special education was cut in K-12 now. We had limited English proficiency was cut. Extended time revenue was cut, which includes like summer school, alternative schools. Teacher of color program is eliminated, but there are bills this year that for collaborative urban educators and others that will put back some of that. When the funding was cut, it wasn't so much. There were a lot of cuts in 2003, but it was the flat funding that did the damage, even more so than that year of a cut. And so that over the last decade, we have not kept up with inflation. And that's why the interest in money on the formula. If we're looking at the consumer price index, 2% of an increase, looks like it's keeping up with inflation, but actually for local governments like schools and cities and counties, you have to use the implicit price deflator, and then that's closer to 3%. So, there's a lot of damage that was done with those flat years in addition to the cuts. The property tax shifts have all been paid back, though, so that's a good thing.
That is something, Madam Chair, that we did last year. That's something we did last year. It was very important to a lot of the school districts. But again, as you mentioned, I think it goes back to 1990, the funding. One of the big issues that really affected some of the rural school districts, yours as well as mine, was the 01 property tax reform bill. We've created some have and have nots because of that. Because what we did was we ran out of money. We told school districts, well, we don't have enough money. The state had said they're going to promise so much money, about 94%, 92%. And because of the tough times we had, we had an issue where the governor basically told some school districts you can levy to garner some more of those monies. And some of the school districts, I'll use Minnewaska as an example. When you took farm property, an acre and a half, you took all the lake cabins off, you took 54% of their property away. And it would be hard for them to do a referendum. So there's some, and that's something that will be coming up. I know Representative Earhart, I think there's a bill coming up that addresses some of the caps that we have going forth also in the referendum. So there's two sides of the issue that we have to look at there.
Any additional questions? Representative Breiland.
Could I, thank you, Madam Chair, also acknowledge Representative Carlos Mariani, who's here and he chairs the policy committee. We're working hand in glove with him, and also on this committee that are on Kate Allard, Representative Murphy as ex officio, Representative Hillstrom, and Representative Swale.
Right, thank you. Thank you for your time. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Earhart.
Anytime anybody would like to see, Madam Chair, the property tax rate that was going on for the suburbs, I still have the papers that we put out in every committee and to the floor. So I'd be happy to show you those.
And Representative Earhart, for those of us who've seen your office, we don't doubt that.
Well, give me a D to find them.
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I saw Representative Sikora in the hallway yesterday, believe it or not, we gave each other a big hug. You get to like a lot of people around here despite political differences. And her comment to me was, be sure you watch out for the suburbs, too. You know, they don't get rolled over with all the bills she's been looking at. And I told her, you heard me say at the beginning here, one of the goals of the committee is regional fairness, and that includes the suburbs. Everybody that comes by, you know, I say, of course, the core cities have needs. Of course, the sparse and greater Minnesota rural districts have needs. But, the suburban districts, ever since we lost the training and experience revenue, as you know, Representative Earhart, have been the low revenue from the state high property tax districts. You know, we don't ask for much and we don't get much. And I'm just very committed to making sure that every part of the state is treated fairly.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Right, seeing none. Thank you for your time and preparation this evening. And last but certainly not least, capital investment. Welcome to the committee, Chair Hausman and Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you for the opportunity to come before you. And we will simply begin by saying, though you have asked us to talk about our priorities in connection to the governor's budget, where we're in agreement and where we're not, it's probably a little early in the process for us to give you that kind of feedback, but the handout is going around. Representative Tinglestad will take you through the governor's request.
And I'm not sure if you were in the room, but Chair Solberg did caution the presenters that the shorter their presentation, the higher their target. So
she'll take the bulk of the time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The handout's coming around, and I'll just do the quick highlights on it. This is the governor's capital budget for this year. Of course, you all know that next year is our main bonding year. This looks at $68.9 million, and there's also $10 million of that is for the user-financed bonding and the Rural Finance Authority. So basically, with what's on the front of this sheet here, it's six projects that equal $21.9 million, and then the RFA for $10 million and the Duluth DEC. And the way it's described is urgent projects or other items of past consensus that the governor's putting forward. So as you can see, $11.8 million for the Department of Transportation, the building that we've been hearing about for a while. Administration, $2.2 million to purchase three parcels for parking needs here at the state capital area. Two projects regarding corrections from Oak Park Heights. Minnesota Zoo, with their inflow infiltration abatement issue, and the city of Stillwater and the $0.2 million would just get them through the 2007 construction season. So we've had hearings on all of these in the Capital Investment Committee, and you know, our process is a little bit different from the other finance committees that you're listening to. So we'll be putting together this smaller bill this year, and then of course the larger bill next year.
Madam Chair, on the back side, we thought it might be interesting for this committee to see sort of the historical record for the various legislative sessions. From the governor's recommendation to user finance trunk highway, and then the line total direct appropriations is cash. And you'll note that in the year 1998, that was a year of a surplus, that the legislature determined to use some of that surplus in capital investment areas. So it just helps to give you a feeling. Peter Stoutson, by the way, always laughs when he hears that it's a bonding year and a non-bonding year, because he points out we always have a bonding bill, and as you can see from this record, he is right. In addition to the issues that Representative Singleton discussed, I would say there are two areas that are of interest to our committee. One is in the area of asset preservation, and particularly for higher ed buildings, the University of Minnesota and Minsky. Those are budget lines that are very often in years when they have buildings that are maybe just a little more able to grab our attention. We frequently cut the asset preservation piece, and so those groups have been in to talk to us about their asset preservation needs. And, of course, transportation is always a big issue in the bonding bill. Local bridges, I think there's a good bit of interest in that, and that is also where we fund the transit ways. The broad areas include natural resources, economic development, higher education, corrections. So this year, if I had to guess, I would say the governor's budget and asset preservation for higher education and transportation would probably be three key areas. I will also say that the issue is that's going through the committees somewhere, and I don't know, perhaps some of you have heard it and know where it's moving, is the Biomedical Sciences Research Facilities Authority, which may eventually come to our committee as well, and so I don't know what recommendations other committees are making about that, but we'll be anxious to take a look at that. What we suggest to this group is when you have one-time money, you don't want to use that one-time money to add to the base, because it's not sustainable for the long haul. And so we would suggest that might be a time to look at, are there one-time problems that can be fixed with that money in a way that takes it off the plate for later when the economy turns sour again. And we, of course, are looking this year at deferred maintenance and asset preservation as perhaps one of those areas. So that's just very quick, both the governor's bill and some additional issues that will be before us.
Any additional comments? Any questions? I'm supposed to make an announcement. If members have not let Jerry or Christine know about their lunch and or bus plans to Rochester, I suppose more technically that's dinner plans for the evening, please do so tomorrow or starve, I guess. The next meeting will be held Thursday at 5:30 in the same room. We'll have another round of budget updates. And Chair Solberg, did you have anything else to add? Given that, the meeting is adjourned.